And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My next guest is Erin Cox, who's with the Washington Post. She's a political reporter. She has been covering Maryland and Annapolis politics for a long time, since about 2007. Before she was with the Post, she was with the Baltimore Sun and the Annapolis Capitol. And she's a good buddy of this show who hasn't been on in a while. It's been a minute. Erin, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I've missed you. Thank you so much for calling me on.
Yeah, we've missed you as well. So you wrote a piece just the other day about how this race between Angela Alsobrooks and David Trone, who are two of 10 candidates in the race for Senate, but two certainly the two leading candidates, has really gotten contentious in recent time. What's going on?
Right, so this is the time when voters start to pay attention, right? These campaigns have been underway for a year, but now is when all of the stuff that had been simmering in the back that hasn't really been out in public, all of a sudden all comes out all at once. And so what we're seeing is kind of a chase for these undecided voters, a chase for people who go about their lives without paying very close attention to politics. They might have heard an ad here or remember a name here, but like when it comes to make a decision, that's when a lot of people kind of focus in and decide what they want. And so in this kind of really critical window where nobody clearly has the upper hand, you have the candidates pulling out every single stop that they can pull to get these undecided voters to them. And so what that has been looking like is Angela Alsobrooks, who is she's been outspent 10 to 1, right? There's no other way around that. David Trone has put $54 million of his personal fortune into communicating with people in Maryland. And you have Angela Alsobrooks, who just can't compete that way. So you have her doing things like coming on your show, paid advertisements, communicating with voters, getting all of her surrogates, which is a lot of the top tier of the Democratic establishment, out there for her. And you have David Trone putting up, I think he has 3 critical ads of her out on the airwaves now, talking about her record on education, talking about people who work with her in Prince George's not backing her and backing him instead. And so you have this kind of moment where attacks and barbs that have been sharpened quietly behind the scenes are all coming out full force at each other. And all of Angela's surrogates are kind of pushing back and, calling out Trone for some of the things he said about them. The example that I mentioned in the story is that David Trone put out an ad with a bunch of people from Prince George's saying that they have seen her up close and that they're going with him. One of the people in the original cut of that ad said the Senate isn't a place for someone with training wheels. And David Trone went on to go on some media interviews and talk about how the quote-unquote low-level people in Prince George's are the ones who endorsed her, implying that he got the top-level people. And so all of her surrogates are pointing out that you can't talk about people that way and that it's very disrespectful and denigrating. So we're kind of at this point where everybody's kind of grabbing on to these little tools that they can use to get voters to think poorly about the other person.
And there is some concern that's been expressed publicly by leaders in the Democratic Party that because this is getting so nasty, that achieving party unity after the primary, which is, Tuesday, and bringing people together behind whoever the candidate is, whoever the nominee is, to meet Larry Hogan, who is the putative Republican nominee, they're concerned about unity. There's a press conference this afternoon, which appears to be organized by supporters of Angela Alsobrooks. It's led by Ike Leggett, Susie Turnbull, Yvette Lewis. These are all former chairs of the state Democratic Party. They're having a press conference this afternoon at 3 o'clock to demand that David Trone stop being negative, because they say that they're concerned about party unity. What are you hearing about that out on the trail when you follow these two candidates around?
I think party unity is one of the things that people who run the party are very concerned about. And I think that there's, also concern that if you beat up your own, if you try to eat your own in the primary, then you're just bruising them ahead of the general. And I think that there's a couple different races where we can see in Maryland there were particularly acrimonious primaries, and then the Democratic nominee went on to lose to Larry Hogan. Ben Jealous In 2018 is an example of that. Anthony Brown in 2014 is an example of that. But I think party unity is something that party leaders think about. When I'm out talking to voters, they don't bring that up, right? Like, they talk about what they care about. They talk about abortion. They talk about immigration. They talk about whether democracy is in a perilous place right now. They talk about ads they've seen or things they know about the candidate or how they ended up deciding who to go with. And several of them have talked about whether they think that person would be better off beating Larry Hogan. But I haven't heard any voters in the trail in the 3 days that I went out talking to folks concerned about party unity. I think party unity is a concern of the people who run the party.
Erin Cox is my guest. She's a reporter with the Washington Post, been covering politics around these parts for a long time. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you have a question for Erin, our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. So, Erin, Governor Wes Moore was in town yesterday walking around Northeast Baltimore with Mayor Brandon Scott. He didn't use the word endorse, but he talked about the fact that he was a good partner with Mayor Scott. And he said that when it comes to the Senate race, which he has endorsed, he's not endorsing in local races, with the exception of one race for the city council here in Baltimore. He is endorsing in the Senate race. He has endorsed county executive also Brooks, and he says that the road to Capitol Hill goes through Baltimore City. So he, as a pretty astute politician, proved himself to be that a couple of years ago, says, you know, whoever does well in the city, as well as Baltimore County, is likely to prevail in this race. Do you see it that way? Do you think that Baltimore City and Baltimore County are going to, you know, be super significant in the outcome here? Because we've got the two leading candidates who are outsiders to that area.
Oh, absolutely. I think from, you know, the moment the strategies were being drawn up for both of these candidates, they saw it this way too, and have spent a lot of money on Baltimore airwaves. I'm sure all of your listeners have been inundated by ads. They've spent a lot of time going to black churches in the city. They've spent a lot of time developing policy points. And, you know, this is kind of always, you know, an element of Maryland's political scene, that there's a bit of a dichotomy and tension between the D.C. suburbs and the city and Baltimore County. And I think that, you know, neither of them have a natural base in the city or the county. Neither of them have, you know, reputations there. They've never represented the area. They've never had to work on policy there. And so in a lot of ways, it was a fresh slate for both of them, right, to be able to totally introduce themselves anew to voters. And so that's both like an opportunity and a hurdle, right, because they need to be able to convince people to come out for them and to listen only to like how they are selling themselves. So, I mean, I think that it's always been the case that Baltimore County in particular has been, is often a bellwether for the rest of how Maryland's votes end up going, just as because of its mix of socioeconomic and party divisions. But I think that in this particular case, that winning that area, winning the Baltimore region, is pivotal to coming out of a Democratic primary.
You mentioned electability. Council or County Executive Alsobrooks and I talked about that. Each candidate, Trone and Alsobrooks, making the case that they are the best suited to confront and beat Larry Hogan, who again is widely expected to be the Republican nominee for the general election. What are you hearing from voters? How are they making the calculation as to who is better suited to beat Hogan? Because, I mean, I think at the end of the day, when it comes to votes in the Senate, if either of them, Trone or Alsobrooks, is elected to the Senate, the votes will probably be very similar. The priorities may be different. They certainly have very different styles. But when it comes to actual votes on legislation, they'd probably be pretty close. But when it comes to getting that far, getting to the Senate, how are our voters making the calculation about who's more electable?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Some voters you talk to will tell you who they picked in the primary, and then you ask them what they think about the governor, the former governor, and whether they would vote for them. And some of them pause, and some of them haven't considered it at all. And then some of them do a version of like, well, Larry was a good governor, but I can't send him to the Senate. I can't give the Senate to Republicans. And then some of them will kind of pause and say, yeah, you know, I don't know. I really liked him. I'm not sure. And so I think that, you know, there's this kind of cross pressure among a lot of folks in Maryland, particularly more moderate Democrats and folks we aren't seeing at the polls yet, which are, you know, independent voters who don't vote in the primaries. This kind of cross pressure between, you know, Larry Hogan, for whatever reason, they liked when he was governor, and he was a sort of Republican they were okay liking when he was governor and when he was moderated by a legislature full of Democrats.
Yeah, who, a lot of Democrats in that legislature.
Override his veto. Right. There's a lot that goes into why Larry Hogan was likable in Maryland, and some of those things don't have much to do with Larry Hogan.
Right. And I'm sorry, Aaron, but we're out of time, so we will pick up that that thread probably after this primary election when we are in the heat of a general election. But I appreciate the time, as always, and appreciate your great reporting for The Washington Post. Thanks so much.
Oh, Tom, I appreciate you and everything you do for your listeners. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Aaron Cox, she covers politics for The Washington Post. Early voting ends tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Polls open on Election Day next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And this programming reminder, WYPR will have complete coverage of all the important races in the Baltimore metropolitan region on Tuesday night, beginning when the polls are scheduled to close at 8 o'clock. So I hope you will join me for primary night in Maryland to get results and analysis of the races for Senate, the House, Baltimore City contest for mayor and the city council, etc. Fresh Air is up next after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.